This episode of Off Course is brought to you by Bag Boy. For 75 years, Bag Boy has been at the forefront of pull cart production, challenging what is possible and pursuing various ways of bolstering the walking experience. From the two-wheel wonders of the 60s to the three- and four-wheel carts of today, Bag Boy continues to provide an optimal experience for the walking golfer. Visit www.bagboy.com for more info.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I am your host, Dan Edwards. You can find me on social, on Twitter, actually, at Canadan Golf, I think. I haven't said that in a while. Now, obviously, Off Course THP with us today for his premiere episode is Mr. JD Talks at JD Talks on Twitter. What are you on? What are you on Instagram? Are you on Instagram? You have kids. You're on everything, right?
I am on everything, actually. Yes, on Instagram. I'm actually not sure of my handle on Instagram.
He doesn't know his handle, so he's not worth following. Follow him on Twitter at JD Talks. He is a staff member over on THP. Great friend of mine. His name is Jeremy. Welcome to Off Course, my friend. How are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. Happy to be here. Finally, I've been waiting for this invite.
Yeah, it's only like 64-ish episodes in. I mean, it's not a big deal. You didn't have to listen to any one of the episodes to get on, so it's perfect. You're up in Michigan right now, which is like millions of miles north of Ohio where I am. How is the golf landscape been for you up there?
Well, this summer, it's been wet. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Besides that, it's been very busy. It's very difficult to get a tee time. It's been a challenge playing rounds under 5 hours at times.
Really?
Unless you're getting off really early in the morning, which I like to do.
Okay.
But even then, like I played this morning and the course was packed. We teed off at 7:20 a.m. and the course was packed.
How many people are ahead of you at a 7:20 tee time? I'm assuming two or three.
No, it was more like six.
Yeah. Michigan is golfing right now. There might be Ontarioans coming down. Still unsure whether they're allowed to play up there playing golf in the United States.
People are coming everywhere, like out of the woodwork. I had a conversation with the starter this morning. Mm-hmm. So we've had some interesting things happen at the particular course we played today. And he was saying that on a Sunday, for example, before COVID, they had 70 rounds on average on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Since that, they're up to over 230 rounds on a Sunday now.
On a Sunday.
So they've tripled the amount of rounds that they're putting out on the course.
So you already used the C word. We're not even 3 minutes in. I'll allow it because it's sort of topical. That's crazy, man. And I'll be honest, you do it a little bit differently than I do. I've been committed to a private course here for many, many years, intentionally. So you're more of the public play guy, but you also do weekdays, if I'm not mistaken. It's mostly weekday play for you, like weekday mornings?
Yes, mostly. I like to get out early in the morning, get my round in before I head to work and try and avoid the crowds. And typically it would be the heat in the middle of the summer, but this year it's the rain. So,
right. So 5 hours at 7:20. Now
it didn't take 5 hours this morning. Okay. I mean, typically we try to get out early so that we can get around quick. I mean, usually it's under four.
Okay.
In an early morning round, but if you're playing in the afternoon, forget it. Just plan on being there all day, pack a lunch.
Or protein bar, whatever you're into.
Whatever, right.
So you've been down here, you've played my golf course, and I've talked with a number of guys, especially fellow golfers at my course, saying that we are unbelievably spoiled to go out there on a weekend and have the sort of expectation that we have there, which is if you're playing at 4:20, which is technically pace of play, you are playing way too slow. So you've been here, we've played in different conditions. You brought the rain with you, if I remember correctly. Was the pace different here than what you're used to up there?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a lot faster there, it seems like. I don't know if it's because people know the course versus where I'm playing at the public.
Maybe, or they know the people.
They don't want to get in trouble. I don't know.
That's wild. Yeah, I've had chats a lot. Especially last year when it was challenging to get a tee time, even at a course with limited membership and limited tee time availability. It's improved for us quite a bit this year. I would say the pace of play hasn't improved. It actually has gotten a little bit worse. Thank you, two person to a cart instead of one rider, one cart.
I missed the one rider to a cart. That was fantastic.
But in your defense, you also get to, you know, take a push cart if you really choose to with freedom. And I've gone over that in the show before. So
right.
you can feel free to bash my face in over it, but I think it's been abused enough at this point. Other than I do have a kind of a funny story. I went down and hung out with our good buddy JB over at the THP headquarters a couple weeks ago and got to use a moto caddy on the golf course. So it's like you push a button, it goes, you watch it go, you feel good about yourself and life, and then, you know, golf, right? So I sent a video of that to my dad, and it's sort of made the rounds to a bunch of members. And I guess it's now become a topic at the advisory board. So I'm super glad I don't have to deal with that, but it's nice to know I'm making an impact. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, you never know. Maybe you'll be allowed to rent motorized carts. Yeah,
$20 a round. Sure. I'll take a rider. Yeah, exactly. Thanks. Well, that's interesting, man. I know you play a lot with our buddy Damien, right? Shout out to him.
I do. Yep.
Who's a better golfer? Do you bury him on a daily or what?
No. When we're both playing well, he always beats me. I think maybe once I've beat him, but
is that with or without handicap?
No handicap.
So I think he should give you pops, man. I'll work on him.
That's well, we're not playing like matches. We're just
big money, big money games. I know you. I've seen you in action. You're always playing for wheel and dealing for strokes and big money. Don't act like
I need those strokes, you know.
See, I called it. you told me about something that happened to you today, and I'm going to bring it up, even though I know you don't want to. First time on the show. We're going to use you've already used the C word. Let's use the H word. What happened on that par three?
Oh, you had to do this to me, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. I did. Yeah.
Well, I hit Mr. what I like to call Mr. El Hozel.
El Hozel.
Yeah. He likes to keep me honest. He pops up from time to time. And today on the 16th hole. It was a 120 yard downhill par three. And I had a gap wedge and I choked down on it a bit and tried to hit it nice and smooth, and off she went to the right into the heather.
So was this like the old classic D cell trying to lay a little bit off it or what?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I D-celled and didn't rotate through it. And of course, you know, it's a par three, it's 120 yards. I'm going to re-tee.
Yeah.
Re-teed, hit the next shot to 6 feet, and then made the putt for bogey. So, like, that's just fantastic.
That's golf.
And, of course, at the time, I was only five over through 15.
Okay.
And, yeah, it kind of – I blew a tire after that. That's what I like to say. I ended up plus nine for the round. So,
how is that for your confidence? Because I've seen you do it every once in a while, and it's like out of nowhere. It just arrives, and then you sort of work your way through it. I know a lot of people use alcohol. I don't know that that's your go-to to solve it.
At 9:30 in the morning. Yeah. No, it's not. If I'm playing in the afternoon, I might be searching for the cart girl for sure. But okay. It's not as mentally challenging as it was a couple years ago when it was happening more frequently. I've since learned what causes it for the most part. And yeah, it does creep in every now and again, but it doesn't totally freak me out. A couple years ago, it would happen and I was done. Like the round was over. I would stand over the ball and I'd be scared to hit it because I didn't know where it was going to go. So yeah.
If it makes you feel any better, that's like 99.9% of golfers who they hit it once and suddenly they're incapable of golfing. You know, it's that mental.
It's paralyzing. Yeah,
it right? really is.
You just stand over the ball and you're like, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know where this is going to go. You're telling people who normally know that you can hit the ball fairly straight, you know, and you might not want to stand there. They look at you like you're crazy, and like, then it happens. You're like, oh.
The sad part is there are so many people sitting here listening right now going, yep, I've been there. So at least you don't feel alone. And I'm going to flip this a little bit and make you feel better. Are you ready for it?
I am so ready. Yes.
I am in such disarray right now that for the first time in ages, I went and got a lesson.
Wow. You went and got a lesson.
I did. And it's not because I don't have a guy. I have a guy. He's a great, great instructor. And I made a thread on THP talking about it a little bit. I feel like there's this level of defeatism that goes into when you get to a certain point, it's like, if I can't fix this on my own, I suck. You know what I mean? It's so stupid.
Well, and we feel that way, right? But pros are getting lessons all the time, it seems like, right? And even when they're playing good, they seek out help and want to make it better. So,
right.
Why do we get freaked out about it? I don't know.
What are the three things that are just about guaranteed behind every guy at the pro tour level? Number one, an alignment stick. Number two, a shot tracking device, whether it's GC Quad or TrackMan. And number three, a guy who looks incredibly important watching him hit, you know, not including his caddy.
Right.
So, yeah, I finally caved. And you know, the funny thing, Jay, is golf is so backwards. You know, the concept of you have to hit it right to go left kind of thing, like intentionally, like everything's sort of backwards. So I was doing all these things sort of wrong. Like, I had the idea right. I had to put the club in a certain place right, but it was so backwards that it was making things worse. And it's like progressive, right? Because first it was driver. I was just like, I'll just leave in the bag. We don't need to talk about it. I did okay. And then it was three wood. Then it was utility. And I hit a few irons tonight. I was like, it's doing it with the irons. I am so sick of this nonsense. But there's light at the end of the tunnel. I have a range session scheduled with my 5-year-old tomorrow. Hopefully he's got some good feedback for me at 7:30 in the morning.
Nice.
So I am skipping a little open coverage and I feel okay about it. But yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not an awful lot. And I hear that Patrick Reed doesn't tee off till the afternoon anyway. So we're fine. So
definitely don't want to miss that.
Right. So I have a question for you when it comes to lessons. You look like the kind of guy who would drop everything to go get a lesson.
No. I've literally had two one-on-one lessons in my entire golfing career, which is, 27 years or so? I've had two lessons one-on-one. And
really?
They both were in the last 3 years when I was having the troubles, when I could not figure out why the hosel was coming into play.
You guys stop using that word on the show, man.
It wasn't the S word, at least. So.
That's true. So interesting. And do they more or less solve what you were looking for?
I wouldn't say they solved it, but they definitely helped me understand what the problem was. Video is a great tool if you... I'm no expert, right? But I could, once they showed it to me, I could see it. And then after that, then I would go to the range and I'd video myself and I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm supposed to be here and I'm here. So it helped me understand things a little bit better.
Okay. So why stop there? Why not continue it?
Life, man. I'd rather get out on the course than go. If I have the choice to practice or play, I want to go play. Right.
Okay.
And I don't always have time to go practice for an hour. You know, I'd rather get out on the course and spend four or five hours, but still, it's just, it's just time. It's time, really.
So practice in 9 is nowhere close to as viable as full 18.
If I had a course like yours where I could go do that, I think I could do that. I could go practice, then go play 9. But reality is there's not many courses around here that I have that have a range and I could go play 9 at and still, you know, be home in time to do what I got to do.
So I have a sort of a question challenge. I'd love to hear from people on social about this. And I posted on THP a little bit. We have a big forum over there where we talk golf lots. Obviously, Jeremy is heavily involved in that as well. I asked, like, what does the idea of getting lessons freak you out? And I think that's such a multifaceted question because there are so many elements that go into that question that I've had to sort of battle. Like, first of all, I mentioned it. I'm effectively admitting defeat,
right?
That's which is stupid because everything we do with improvement, you know, you don't just magically get good at something and maintain that. You need a second pair of eyes, whatever skill level you're at. The other part is it's cost associated. So it's sort of frustrating that, you know, lessons aren't cheap. There's no way around that.
No, they're not. And some are way more expensive than others too, depending on the teacher.
Yeah. And I think the third thing, and this is something that I realized while getting the lesson today, and I wonder if people out there relate to it, is that I'm always afraid that the lesson is sort of this fleeting experience where I get through it and I digest and I digest and then I just basically fall asleep and it's all gone, right? Like it's a great hour of consideration followed by, obviously you need that execution, but am I capable of putting that into action is my fear. It's right. A silly fear. And it's nice that I do have a little bit of knowledge on what the swing is doing and what I'm trying to achieve, so I can see it personally and not be, you know, super incapable of dissecting a couple things. But on my case, like, am I going to be present enough and not shamed or, you know, lost or confused or sideways to the point where I can't take something from this tangibly and move forward as a golfer? I think that's always my biggest fear.
Does that make you wonder if, did you go for the full hour?
We went for an hour and a half. Like I said, he's my guy.
Well, that's all. Okay. Well, so that's always my thing. Like, do you do half hour lesson? Is that better in short spurts than doing a full hour?
Mm-hmm.
That maybe do you retain more information in shorter amount of time? Because after that half hour, maybe you are tuning out. Just like, okay. Like, I just want to hit balls. Like, you know,
yeah. Well, you're also emotionally beaten, right? Because most of the time in a good lesson, you're not going to do full swings the whole time. You're going to stop at the top. You're going to sit there and stare at what's broken. Then you're going to do like half drives through and stare at what's broken. And then you're going to try for the next 20 minutes to get into a place your body won't let you get to. And then you spend the other, whatever, 30 minutes hitting 50% shots, trying to replicate the shape that you're trying to produce. Exactly. That is challenging, man. That's the sort of concession. And I'm a lower cap. I've had some good success on the golf course. So there's a point where, you know, you don't want to be that. And that was my final point to make, was that my fourth fear here in a lesson from my end was, I've played some great golf. Will this actually solve my issues? And if not, has my best golf officially been put behind me? That's such a fear I have, you know, because you're always chasing better, right?
Well, I think that's what everyone fears when you hear lessons, because we've all heard so many stories. Like, it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Right.
Well, I don't want to get worse. Like you said, your cap is where it is. And I mean, if you're a higher cap, then maybe that's not as, it doesn't apply quite as much to, let's say, a single cap. You know, because they're already having a few issues on the course, let's say, and that's going to help them. They're going to practice more. They're going to get better. The single cap, the lower cap, is thinking, all right, I'm playing good. I'm playing pretty good. I don't want to get worse. I don't want to go from shooting 78 to 82 to 90 because I'm taking a lesson. That's the fear, right?
Right.
That's, at least that's my fear.
Yeah. I think it's sort of the unknown. And I guess it's different for guys like you and I who have spent all that time building our own swing and not being under the tutelage of someone at any sort of depth. You know, I've had a number of lessons from this guy, David Allen. Shout out to him. He's over at Top Golf here in Cincinnati. And he is my guy. I choose to not go to anyone else because I have a lot of faith in what he tells me. But at the same time, you know, outside of those handfuls of lessons, I'm basically self-taught, you know, and there's fear there. And I've heard people in the discussions I've had with it saying, there's no bigger fear to me than having someone go and say, you need to completely dismantle and let's rebuild.
Yeah. You know, that, you don't want to do that because you know everything that you've been doing for so long.
Right.
Maybe it's not the right way, but it works for you. And if you start changing stuff, then it all goes bad.
Well, I might have led into the lesson with like, look, let's not blow this whole thing up because there was a time when this actually worked for me. So let's get back to that. Let's start there. And if I'm having a good time, let's make it worse or better.
I think that's teacher dependent too. Like, I don't know. Yeah. Some teachers might not be able to do that. They have to, they only know one way.
I will tell you a small tip I received from someone else who is a teaching professional. Actually two tips at this point have been the leading cause of my transition into this location that I've been put in as I transition into my downswing that have caused the most problems. That the mental feedback that I've like took from that and tried to accommodate into my own swing destroyed what I had worked on so hard.
Really?
So long. Yeah. And that's the big fear, right? Is that you don't, if you can't jive with someone to the point where they're telling you to do something, it doesn't produce results almost immediately, even at 50%, then you're the worst thing you want to do. And this is a great comparison. You hit one off the hosel and what's the next thing you do? You look at the golf ball and you say, I can't do this. I'm not capable. And when someone tells you something and you can't apply it, I think the same thing comes in. Golf is a game of confidence, 100%. Oh, you know,
100%. Yep.
That distance between your left ear and your right ear is the most challenging hole you'll ever play in your life.
But I never subscribed to that theory until I had all those issues, and then I was like, "Man, you're right," because you can't get it out of your head. That's all you can think about.
Why do you think guys are so much better when they drink 12 beers? Why do you think I have a friend? Because
they're not thinking.
I have a friend who I call it. It's this lubricated skill that he secures, and it's like he starts out there and it's like, yeah, okay, he's okay, and he's already too deep or whatever. And let's be clear, he's not an alcoholic, he's controlled. There's a point where he's, you know, diminishing returns, but once you start to get a few into him, he suddenly becomes a more competent golfer. I'm on the other side of the spectrum. If you get me to a certain point, even if it's a small amount, I fall apart to pieces. So it's just different mindsets. But I think for him, when you eliminate some of that ridiculous secondary thought, suddenly you're capable of doing it. I should get my dad to drink more when he plays. What do you think? You've met my dad. He might do all right.
Eddie,
if you're listening, I'll get you the rums and we'll see how it goes. Because he's a range professional. He's phenomenal on the driving range. Let's get him out on the golf course with a couple of transfusions and see how he does.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, we'll get you that invite back down to do that. We need a transition though, because we're over 20 minutes in and we haven't talked about the biggest thing this week. And I'm saying that despite the fact that I got a lesson, which is clearly the biggest thing this week.
Much bigger than the Open.
Yeah. Can you call that? I've heard it's the British.
I'm trying to be PC right now. I've always called
the Open
British
champion.
Yeah.
So DJ got onto an interview, and I swear he's got the two best sound bites of the week. The first one had to do with when I was growing up, I called it the British Open, but now I call it the Open Championship. And they were like, basically to the point of what changed, what caused you to change it? And he goes, because that's what it's called. Something to the tune of that, like, because that's what it is, which cracks you, because it's just DJ. Wow. What kind of putter you use at TaylorMade, you know, that it's so matter of fact and ridiculous. And then the other one, we'll get into both. I think it's funny you said British Open to you. I say Open, the Open, or the Open Championship. I don't know why. The same reason I just call it the U.S. Open. I feel good about it, so that's what it's going to be. You know, it's not going to be anything else. And also why I think the U.S. Open should always be red, white, and blue.
Right, exactly.
Which is very opinionated. So the other quote that I want to share with DJ is they were talking about the Brooks v. Bryson stuff, which I'm sure everyone's super thrilled to hear more and more about. He goes, they basically ask him, like, whose side are you on? He's like, I'm in the middle. I really don't care.
That's exactly DJ all the way. So,
can you not appreciate? Yeah. Can you not appreciate how simple that response was? He could have played it fair. He could have had a little fun with it. Instead, he goes, yeah, I don't care. Whatever.
That's really DJ's style. He just doesn't care. It doesn't seem like he cares about much.
So that, well, that's how I feel about the naming convention of the Open or the British Open or whatever we're calling it. But where does this rank in your majors? Is it number two?
No.
Really?
Maybe like 2.5. Masters has to come first for me always.
It has to.
Yeah. And then the US Open would come second, only because it's here. It's someplace. Well, I guess I could go overseas to watch, but I've been to a US Open. But I guess golf is this the way golf was supposed to be played, right? All the link style golf. So
is it the way is it the way golf
is where it was born, right?
Or was it just what they had to work with?
I guess that's what they had to work with at the time.
Is this like a fairway divot conversation? The way it's supposed to be played? We're going to go down every rabbit hole you don't want to tonight. I suppose it's today, depending on when people are listening. Yeah, that's a good... I love the debate, and I also very much love the fact that most lists start with not considering the Masters, what is the next best major. It's pretty interesting that Augusta gets that mega nod, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
I think the interesting thing is that the British Open or the Open Championship, even though it doesn't have a naming identity, it has an identity of experience, right? They've got the rota. They know what to expect when you go and play at the British or at the Open. You get potentially awful conditions, firm, run it out, play it low and let it roll, as Tiger would say. Totally different experience. Whereas the U.S. Open is just like a hybrid of whatever the year.
They want to make it as hard as they can.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think that the Open has a better chance of retaining that second spot because its identity is so solidified?
Well, I do. For me, one of the things I do love about the Open is the creativity that the guys have to do around the green, right? Or I guess even not around the green, but it's not just hit a wedge, stop it, make the putt. I mean, we're seeing putters from 30 yards off the green. And, you know, I mean, it's just creative though. You're seeing different stuff that you're not going to see here. And
yeah,
and the weather is always a factor, always a factor. I mean, it makes it tougher. Nobody likes to play in wind and rain.
So for someone who maybe lives in and around the Bandon area or like plays the Straits courses a lot, those areas with high wind and more of that link style profile, do you think they watch that and have the same sort of experience? Because what you're speaking about is more unique to what you do day to day, right? Your version of golf versus their version of golf. But obviously there's a form of that here in some cases, especially sure. When the wind's super high. And there are certainly locations where that applies, which is why I still haven't been to Bandon or Straits out of pure fear.
I haven't been there either.
You know, and I like the idea of all these guys trips we're about to take together, thanks to one episode here on Off Course. is it something about that that's appealing because it's so different to your daily?
I think that's exactly what it is. It's just different. It's more challenging. It's not something we see very often at all. I mean, there's link style courses around that you can go play, but I don't think it's the same. It's not near water. And unless the wind's really kicking up, it's not going to be the same.
In Ohio, we call that fall and winter and like medium spring.
Right.
So do you have a guy you like this week? I know typically the THP staff puts on, you know, the major picks and potential dark horses. We didn't get a chance to do that here for the Open, but here's your chance to make claims since this will be dropping on a Friday. So you can't hide from it once you do.
You know, I was doing a little bit of reading earlier, trying to look at some stuff, and I don't know why. I think Rory's going to play well this week. I really do. The last few majors, he started out slow, but then he's really turned it on after that. And mm-hmm. if he can just get going early, he always plays well over there, and at least recently. And
so here's my question to you. He's got, what, like a 3 o'clock tee time tomorrow, I think. And I only know that because he used Golfax on Twitter. Shout out to them. Let us know when he and Patrick are playing. I think it's like an afternoon tee time, isn't it?
I actually have no idea.
I think it is. What if he were to go in the morning and play some local track that's close, get the first bad 18 out of the way, which he loves to do, and then just kick it straight over the golf course? I mean, he's a fit, youngish guy. He can handle an extra round, right? You think that would just kick him into high gear?
No, I don't think so. It's no. a good idea. So. No, it sounds like a great idea, but it'll never happen.
I love the idea of Rory getting out there and putting on a show. He's a guy, you know, I watch his swing, man. Is there obviously DJ's swing is super unique, right? In that he's got this like crazy bowed wrist and, you know, weird things happen. But one thing I really like about Rory is his swing is so, there's not a word for it. It's just fantastic watching him just pound golf balls. And it's maybe it's pure envy on my part because my swing's so ugly, but you know, it's just fun to watch him hit drives. And it seems like everyone who's there around him makes those comments as he's hitting.
His swing is beautiful, right? I mean, it's not as painful to watch as, like, say, Bryson, who's pounding it way down there. But his swing actually looks like it hurts.
Yeah.
We couldn't do that. Rory's just smooth, and the ball just goes and goes, right?
Right. You think –
So it's fun to watch. If he can get something going early, I think he'll be in contention for sure.
Okay. I like that. Do you think Bryson can find a way to dial it back a little bit, which is what he's been suggesting beforehand, that he can't just go at everything?
I don't know if he can do it. I really don't. We've all seen the struggles with his short game at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he has the creativity personally around the greens to do something different.
How about Jordan Spieth? That's always an interesting name that comes up. They seem to like the idea of him being involved here because it's a bit of a quirky design. And
he's not my favorite golfer, he does play well. He does play well over there. And
I'll save you. Who is the one guy in, let's say, the top 30 who everyone wants to win, but you do not want to win? Tell me the guy you want to crash and burn. I'm going to get him as a guest on the show, just so you know.
Oh God, Patrick Reed.
Yeah,
yeah.
I should have exempted him. Of course, you don't want Reed to do well. Yeah. Huh? Well, there's your letdown of the day, folks. Patrick Reed. Are we talking like full on crash and burn, like pair 40s or what?
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
I think I'd absolutely be okay with that.
Oh man. Well, I'm super excited to watch it. Are you doing like the wake up early thing? Do you have access to it when you actually are working throughout the day, the broadcast and all that?
Yeah, I do. I'll probably have it on the second computer screen at work.
Okay. Are you getting up early for it, or are you just normal days work?
Tomorrow will probably be normal. We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
There's been years where I've woken up at 5 a.m. I won't get up when they start it. 1:45 or whatever it is this morning, but if I'm up early, it'll be on while I'm drinking coffee and stuff.
Okay, that's not bad. I haven't decided what I'm gonna do yet because I'm not like a morning guy, you know this. I'm like, right? You know, there's never been a night I've minded being present for, so
love this because I used to get up very early in the morning, and it was like first thing you could do, turn on the TV, there's golf.
Yeah.
You can watch it for hours before you even have to go to work. I used to make it a plan to do that, but not anymore.
Yeah, I like the West Coast stuff, the Hawaii stuff, because it's so late. that I get to watch like in my evening, which is pretty cool. We need some more like super weird times. Let's do some more WGCs somewhere. Let's get some crazy schedule golf in there. I'm super down for that.
Evening golf is fantastic. I agree.
There's another thing I want to talk to you about today. As we kind of work through all this stuff, the Open is what it is. I hope everyone enjoys watching it this week. I like the idea of Rory winning. I think it'd be super fun to watch that. I think anything Phil does at this point is entertaining to me. So he's more than welcome to go and put on a show. I'm not sure if he can, you know, but I obviously gave him the US Open nod. So I feel unfair not to just throw all my chips in on him, but I have to throw Mackenzie Hughes there again. And I think he's in the field.
You got to have your Canadian.
my dark horse for every event ever, which has been pretty fun. I want to talk to you about a couple golf product things as we move towards the end of the show. This is kind of a fun time of year. Obviously, the golf industry has been super mixed on releases, whatever they can, whenever they can kind of thing. But there's a couple of companies that sort of appealed to me straight away as they continued their lineup. It's always an interesting thing to see the companies continue a lineup. So you've got the C721 Pro from Tour Edge, the STG from Mizuno, and then you've got the Diamond Heads from Callaway. What do you think about that? Do you like the whole mid-release thing, or do you think it should all be stacked?
I kind of like it. I think it's fun to add in a few products later down the line. There's no reason why everything needs to be released at once. It's a long year. It's a long season. Why not give the people some more stuff to go buy later in the year?
Yeah. So it seems like a lot of these are, the intent is pretty low inventory, focused on certain style of player. We had a pretty fun chat with Callaway, basically said, these are, the intent here is for the tour guys. They want things that you probably don't, as politely as possible.
That's so not true though, because people want the tour stuff. Well, they can't get their hands on it.
The reality is if you stamped three diamonds on a standard, Epic or Speed Head, they'd probably be more fortunate or more successful than Max LS Standard stamped with, unicorns than they would with the, four tour flat, open faced, low or mid spin heads. I'm speaking about myself here, by the way.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I'm not sure what my thoughts are on those in total, but I do love the idea of, if you've got a product that works and shows promise, get it out there and let people hit it. I've always said that, even if it's a weird timing, don't wait. Let's put everything you have on the table and see if it sticks to anyone.
So you'd rather have it all at once?
No, I like the idea of, if there's something there that works and performs, even if it's a tour tweak that, could be applied to the whole head. Like for example, the 721 Pro, it's labeled Pro and they have pretty small numbers. I mean, if that's a lower spin head, I think it was a tighter size with a deeper face. I'm sitting there going, yeah, I'll have that. Thank you. Yeah. The idea of waiting for the next cycle to say, let's throw something like that in there. I think it's much better to say, let's get that out there in this iteration and improve it for the next one, even if that means the next one comes out with, C721, C521, C721 Pro all at the same time, just the next iteration. Gotcha. So if it's a inventory control thing, not super excited about it. If it's a, hey, we got a cool idea, this is what we came up with, let's get it out there as soon as we can kind of thing, it's kind of an add-on, I'm way good with that.
How does that compare for you to say like how Cobra does the major releases on their drivers and they have all these different colors that they come out? What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's interesting. And what I find really fascinating about that is, other than the fact that we know it's coming, right? So they made it pretty clear that they have different variations. You see, and I wonder if for the Cobra fan out there, I know you've been particularly close to the Cobra drivers over the last few years. If you're going to go buy the next driver and you see something come out and you're like, man, I have to have that product, but deep down inside that a couple months down the line, there's going to be something super cool looking on this head. That would be really hard for me. I love that they do it. I think it's kind of their way of doing this sort of custom style thing that you see companies like Callaway do so well.
That was going to be my next question. Do you think that the custom, like TaylorMade has a custom thing, right? Callaway does.
Yeah.
Do you think that is more, but more better, better than the pre-design versions that they put out?
I don't know, man. I think the best thing to do would be to say, this is our product, but we have things in the works. And you know, the nice thing about Cobra, as I mentioned, was everyone kind of knows the major releases are coming. Right. The nice thing about Callaway is everyone knows there's my custom or custom services there. The TaylorMade, everyone knows there's the custom services there. Whether that applies or not is kind of, you know, in the air, but at least there's some familiarity that if you're patient, which obviously no one is, you have the potential to get to that point. But my perspective is, why not? You know, as much as it can be frustrating as a golfer to say, I see something I really like, but I'm going to hold off. Why not give it in many, as many versions as possible? Because you're not always going to please everyone. You know, I'm a huge fan of blue, which means as soon as I saw Sim 2, I was like, that is a hot looking head. But not everyone's a huge fan of blue. You know, maybe, maybe something looks a little too Florida Gatory and they're more of like an FSU guy kind of thing. You know, like there's that gap between people. Like I'll give you a great example. Toulon came out with a Columbus, right? And you know, how many guys from Michigan, to be a little bit more complicated, how many guys from Michigan are like, I totally roll a Toulon Columbus. No problem. I love the head cover too. It looks great.
Oh yeah. Zero.
Yeah. Zero. And that's a terrible example in that it's a very small amount that was done from that very first release, but it's a good example. And to say you're sort of isolating by picking a color, by picking a style, by picking a matte versus gloss type of thing. You know, it's all there. And if you have the ability to do more than that, especially if you're controlling your inventory, I say, why not? But let people know it's coming. Give them an idea. And I'll give you another great example of that because it's very much a this week sort of thing. Mizuno just came out with T22, the new wedges, in this unbelievable finish. I know you've seen it because it's been all over social and the forums today. Yep. It appears to be like a brush copper style finish, which has a bit of, I think, potential for patina over time. They also have a satin and a raw finish. I don't know what crazy lunatic would use a raw club. James Miles talking to you.
Rust.
Yeah. No. But you know, that's a great example where they could have just come out with those traditional styles. But you're improving the potential and interest of people. Now, if Mizuno comes out later and says, well, we're going to do the blue again, or we're going to do black or whatever, I struggle with that a little bit, but having those options at the forefront, there's three options, right? So they could have come out with, well, we have satin, we have raw. And then 3 months later, oh, hey, by the way, we have the sick copper, right?
Right.
Don't have that.
Yeah, in that instance, for sure, I would much rather see all of them at the same time and let people choose.
So at least in this case, you get that full experience. And if they come down with a new version of something later, I guess I'm okay with it because they have such an, I mean, everyone's going to want the copper anyway. It's fine. But you know, that's, you're actually playing a set of irons that was a sort of second iteration of, right? It's the Cobra King Forge Tech.
King Tours.
Oh, you have the Mim Tours.
I have the Mim Tours, that's yes.
Right, but you have this unbelievable copper series finish, which...
And they are unbelievable, let me tell you.
Yeah.
They look fantastic.
But here's the kind of sideways take on this, and I guess it's probably our last full thought, unless you want to argue with me a bit more, which is totally fine. I saw the original release of Mim Tours, and I'm a huge fan of what Cobra's doing. I think they're making excellent equipment. But I saw it, I was like, I'm not really like a super chromey guy. It doesn't really speak to me. And I'll tell you, as soon as I saw the Copper Series finish, I was like, oh my goodness, these things look unbelievable.
I know. I remember you sent a text and was like, Jay, these are so good.
Yeah, unbelievable. And the wear is pretty solid on them from what I understand. You'll probably be able to speak more to that a little bit later. But I mean, that is a great example of your mid-cycle. You have this new finish you've been working on. You think it's going to really apply well to one of your products. Don't wait. Put it on those things. Because for my case, that would have been the difference between me purchasing them and not purchasing them if I was looking for your irons. No question in my mind.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. For sure. Give the people the options at the very front. Don't wait 6 months.
So my dude, it's been 45 minutes of ridiculousness. Unless you want to throw anything at me. This is a popular, and I'm calling it popular because I love putting people on the spot. You watch the show a lot, if I'm correct. You give me the tremendous service of listening to Off Course most weeks, if I'm not incorrect.
All weeks, yes.
So you have a pretty good idea what's coming at the end of the show. I love to put my guests on the spot and see if they have any questions for me. Do you, sir, have anything for me?
All right. So I was trying to think of something.
Two aside. Good, but two aside at most.
That's not enough.
Okay.
I told you. I want four. That's probably still not enough, but I'll take
it. Okay. So what do you got?
All right. So you've been with THP for quite a while. You've been to a few events.
Yes, sir.
Which moment stands out to you on all the events that you send out or that you've participated in? I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's a really
I know it's a tough ass question.
So,
but there's got to be one, right?
Can I give you three?
Sure.
And I'll. So the three biggest ones for me was the very first, the only granddaddy I was ever in. I had the unbelievably daunting task of beating an unstoppable Zero crew and not getting abused by Harry, which seemed to be a pretty popular thing. And I did that and in strong fashion. And on the, I believe, 16th tee box, I finally allowed myself the service of enjoying the, what were they called, comfort stations. And I ate a Choco Taco while giggling to myself. That sort of feeling of accomplishment that ended up following up with our actual full-on team victory. That was pretty insane. The second one was sort of solidifying the value to THP as a community for me, which was my second Morgan Cup, I think it was. I had the impossible task of playing my great friend James in singles on Sunday. And it didn't last particularly, it didn't go to 18, let's just say. And I had been
working. Many of your matches do they?
That's the third story. So it didn't quite get to 18, but I'd been working unbelievably hard on my game and I had so much to prove, but I never thought I'd have to do it to arguably my closest friend on the site and someone who has sort of anchored me through my time there through friendship and writing and so on. So we had a moment that was more or less pathetic, sappy nonsense on the green. And finally we recovered and spent the next hour riding around in a cart together as though it had never happened. That defined THP as a community for me. So shout out to James for that. And then the third, I think you know where I'm going with this one, was Jeremy and I shared a captaincy for the Morgan Cup and did everything we could to sort of recreate that feeling for people, whether it was a concession of potentially, for lack of a better word, screwing each other in match play and trying to stack the deck. We made sure that the guys had the best chance of playing without dots and enjoying the company of others. And that all completed with you and me walking down a par five with our bags on our backs, probably one of the coolest par fives in the area.
Absolutely.
And grabbing a picture, which I still need to get framed here. that Hag Point, unbelievable golf course, unbelievable experience on Dufusky. You know, that having the opportunity to do stuff like that is super cool. And to have it with you, and now, you know, talking to the podcast, we've been friends for ages now. It's just cool, man. That those are the things that just spoke loudest to me. So
awesome.
Yeah. That was a horribly long-winded response. I don't need guests on this show. I'll just talk to myself. It's fine. Do you have anything else for me, buddy, or is that good?
I just one more quick one, and I hope it should be a quick one, right? Yeah. What ball are you playing this year? Did you decide on one for the season? Are you still with your beloved RX?
Yeah, I've played a lot of RX, more than I want to. Thus, the lesson I just took. And I played some Tourby X, which I did pretty damn good with, which I'm surprised of. But we already knew the irons are fine, so it's just a really bad driver swing that, and I don't want to talk about that. So I put in Chromesoft XLS while I was down a couple weeks ago at HQ and brought a sleeve back with me, and I've been really impressed with that ball. I think I'm not saying I'm moving on. I'm not making any significant claims about the decade long obsession with Tour B or B330, whatever we're calling it. But I will say there's a potential soft spot building up in the armor that surrounds my ball selection. So we'll see. We'll see by the end of the year. My plan, because last year I did one ball for the whole year. I don't know if you've ever done that. It's unbelievable.
That was my plan this year, but I haven't pulled the trigger, but I'm close. I just started playing the new Chromesoft X, and I'm really becoming quite a fan. So.
Okay. So my challenge to you then, as my boy, is that next year, since I've been sort of, for lack of a better word, ball whoring this year, that I think next year we go back to a single ball guy. What do you think? You down with that with me?
I'm absolutely in.
Challenge accepted?
Challenge accepted.
Awesome. Bring it. Yeah. All right. Two aside. That's fun. That's JD Talks on Twitter. He has no idea what he's on Instagram, so it's fine. And to my understanding, he's got Snapchat. I don't know how to do anything on that. So.
Nope. Don't do Snapchat.
Or whatever. What is that?
We'll leave that one for the kids.
Little TikTok or something like that. So. Yeah, it's been super fun, man. I'm really glad I could get you on here. We're definitely going to have to do this again. Maybe even, you know, person to person, in person experience. We'll try and do something like that later on. Talk about that to the side, I get. So thanks, man. I appreciate you, and enjoy the Open this weekend.
All right, you too, man. Good talk.
And everyone else out there, enjoy the weekend of golf. If you're playing, have fun and make it count. Go get a lesson. It's the final thought here. And let me know that you enjoy the Open on social. See you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.